Hey now, what is good? Welcome to Where Wine Takes You, a Paso Wine podcast that is all about the stories, the people, the mentality, the energy, the vibe that makes Paso Wine Country just one of a kind. Certainly the best in California and world class in its own right. I am so glad you're here. My name is Adam Montiel. Don't forget, Paso Wine is going to France, baby. CorkandCruise.com. I'm going to be on board with Don Burns from Turtle Rock, Kit Kuiper from Hawks Hill Ranch, and Juan Mercado of Rise. This is going to be, we're going to be in France. We're going to be on our best behavior, but this boat is going to party. This boat is going to have some fun. I will say that, but we will represent Paso very well, I promise you that. We're going to be doing some live shows from some podcasts from the boat from France, tasting wines of the Rhone Valley right next to wines from Paso, which I think is so cool because here we are tasting wines that we love from Paso right next to the wines that inspired them in the place that they were born. I mean, that's so cool. Go to CorkandCruise.com. Use the code word Paso Wine if you're serious about making a booking. There's some really cool stuff in it for you, including a magnum of an impossible wine to get. Don Burns, his inaugural Cabernet. Signed. Magnum. Large format, baby. Let's do this. Go to CorkandCruise.com. And if you're serious about booking, we're talking August 1st through 8th. Weather's going to be like 80, sunny, Rhone. Oh, it's going to be wild. CorkandCruise.com is the website. Check it out. All right, we got a Travel Paso spotlight later talking about the San Luis Obispo International Film Fest. This is coming soon. There is a film fest going on for a week in San Luis Obispo, then an encore week in Paso. Some really cool wine-related movies and films, like always. Sky and her team does such a great job with the Slow Film Fest. We'll talk about that later on after our conversation in the Travel Paso spotlight. Now, today we're talking about some fresh pours, some really new gems, tasting rooms that maybe you haven't heard of, gone to. These are two brands that I didn't have an excessive amount of familiarity with, heard of them, tasted them here and there, intrigued by them, but never went to visit them. Super excited to introduce you to Carn Wines. That's where we're going to be taping today with Andy Neha, the winemaker for Carn, as well as Calesta. Brian Farrell is the winemaker for Calesta Wines. Both these folks have relatively new tasting rooms. Carn on the east side, industrial chic, right there by Brochelle, top winery, right over there off the 46 East. Calesta, on the other hand, they got their estate. It's in Templeton, and they got truffles. We're going to talk about, they got truffle hunts that they do. Who's doing truffle hunts? I swear there are so many new and exciting and unique experiences that you can do in Paso Wine Country. And these are two new gems, newer tasting rooms. Calesta used to be downtown. We'll talk about that. They moved to their estate, like I said, in Templeton. Let's go to the east side. This area unofficially has been known as the launch pad. Names like McPrice Myers. I even think like Justin and stuff was doing some stuff there back in the day. Edgar Torres, Hug Cellars, Brochelle is there now. Top over there. I'm ready to learn some new stories, taste some new wines, and make some new friends. What do you say? Let's go to Carn. Just give me that moonshine, we'll be fine. We pass on round till the job is done. Can't die in the trees, we'll simplify good company.
Yeah, I mean, our friends Stanley and Elena with Top were here last, and visited the facility frequently with them, and Edgar was here with Augie Hug and Hug Cellars before that, and it's a pretty familiar space, you know, a lot of familiar faces that have been making wine, and like you said, kind of a launch pad, and it's kind of a cool way to look at it, and you know, we're hoping to do the same, you know, just have somewhere to make our wines, show our wines, and it's affordable, and it's good enough location, it's close to town, and it's close to where we live, it's close to my son's school, so a lot of good things with that. And
well, you think of how many people that are coming from the valley pass through here, you know, I mean, you're passing some of the legendary names like Eberly and Toby and a whole bunch more, Vina Robles on the way in,
yeah.
So many great names, and we're just right here, and you, like you said, we're not far from town at all.
No, minutes from town, super close to like the Allegretto Resort, La Quinta, but yeah, a lot of people hit us coming in from from the valley, or not even from the valley, from LA. Because a lot of people come up the 5 and come in 46, and we're a great first stop.
I'm a big fan of the Allegretto, obviously, but the I got to give a shout out to La Quinta. I mean, for so long they've been there, and their general manager Vic Pop he's really put like a Paso feel onto what, by all accounts, is a name that we know as a chain. But he's done such a great job. The place has got such great accommodations, and I mean, I think he's won some awards for, you know, the La Quinta, as far as like the country and stuff. But I think it's probably one of the coolest, nicest chain hotels, and it's right here in Paso.
Yep, it's beautiful, and just right down the highway from us.
So. Yeah, right there. Let's talk about the spelling, because we already have a silent J in your name, but that wasn't enough. We need one in the in the brand as well. C-A-I-R-J-N. It's pronounced Carn, just like the word barn.
Just like the word barn, yes, sir. So it's derived from the word cairn, and a cairn's a monument or memorial built out of a heap of rocks. Well, cairn's widely used in our industry. It's widely used in a lot of industries, but we wanted to have a name that kind of meant the same, and so since the J in my last name's silent and my middle name is James, we thought it would be fun to add a J to the word, make it our word. Now it's our word, so we can say it how we want. So it's
pronounced, and securethat.com.
Yep, and it's pronounced Carn because it's our word, and that's how we can do it.
Yeah, I like that. And I didn't know that was the technical name. Like anytime you're at the beach or on a hike, and you see these rocks that have, you know, they're like they're stacked just so, and they balance perfectly. That's called a cairn.
It's called a cairn, yeah. And you see them when you're hiking. You see them a lot at, like, national parks and stuff because, you know, people use them as trailhead markers and things like that. So if you're a legit backpacker, you're super familiar with, like, seeing these things all the time. And so the people that are will come in, they know exactly what they're talking about.
Got one right outside.
Yeah, but otherwise, well, that's our open and close sign, so.
Oh, is it really?
We stack it up when we're open or when I'm here, and I take it down when we're closed. So, like,
one by one?
One by one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they're just stacked up, and that's how you know where to go when you get here. So anybody with an appointment, we reach out beforehand, tell them, hey, look for the cairn. It's right on the corner of the sidewalk. That's right in front of our doors, and you'll know where you're at.
That's perfect. I like that. We're tasting by appointment here?
Tasting by appointment, yeah. I mean, you can by chance walk in. More chances up for good walk-ins on the weekends because we're obviously here. It's just my wife and I. We're not always here, so being by appointment allows us to, you know, be able to do the regular things that need to be done at a winery and then host tastings as well.
A recent episode we did, we were talking about couples who are in business together. We had Curtis and Gail Haskell and then Jimmy, Shelley Zanoli. What are some of the ups and downs and the things that you experience, you know, doing this with your sweetheart?
You know, there's lots of good, you know, good things, you know, being able to work together. We love being in here together. Our son Keys is here playing too, and you know, we're a family business. That's truly, truly who we are. And so a lot of times we are here as a family. Like, that's just how we have to do it. It's how we have to host tastings, doing events together, doing all the fun things. It's really great. The family comes and helps when we process fruit. The family comes and helps when we bottle. You know, it's truly a village that is helping lift up this business. And, you know, it's hard too because there's a lot of cool things that are happening, a lot of opportunities to do fun things. And, you know, we have a 5-year-old at home. And so there's the cons of we can't always be together, or there's things that have to be done, or I have to travel to do an event, or I have to travel to do a dinner. Those are tough things, but I think that's the same in any kind of line of work.
Sure. How, so, I mean, we're pretty small production?
Pretty small. We're at about, we'll call us at about 1,000, almost 1,000 cases now.
Cool.
So we're kind of growing. This year we're looking to kind of get us into a spot where we'll probably sit for a little bit at about 1,500 cases production in 2024. So just trying to grow the brand, and you know, we're kind of growing it organically now, so we can grow as our membership grows, and we want to do a lot of fun things with our members. So those are things that we can do a lot more of because we can plan those out and all that. So being open by appointment really allows us to do those other events and fun things.
Yeah, growing's tough, Brian, because sometimes you look at it like, you know, we want to grow organically. We just want to grow. We're a business. We'd like to grow. And businesses sometimes have a hard time just doing that. But growing organically, and then sometimes planning your growth is a whole other beast. And it's like, sometimes you start planning something, you're like, oh, be careful what you plan for, you know? So how did Calesta, and you also have a newer tasting, and you guys are on site with your estate now, but how did you guys kind of either master or feel out growth?
So it's definitely been more of a feeling out growth situation because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, this is obviously my first brand. I'm only 33 now, and I started when I was probably 25, something like that.
Wow.
So it kind of went from, I purchased fruit for the first 2 years, so it was kind of easy to control growth, while we were waiting for our state vineyard to come online. But once the vineyard came online, that's where I have an idea of what I want to make every year, but that may or may not be the actual reality. So I'm at about, basically I've been at 1,000 cases for a couple of years now, jumped. The original goal was to 2023, and then stuff was heavy, so I ended up doing a little bit more than that. But the idea was I kind of just wanted to get to about 2,000 cases in the first like 6-7 years, and we're kind of on track for that. But I basically went in 17, 300 cases to 600, and then I was going to kind of stay around 600, but once again, owning your vineyard, when fruit doesn't have a home, you end up making yourself. So I ended up jumping to 900 to 1,000 a little bit sooner. What's kind of good for me is I, for all my reds, it's barrel for 20 months and then in bottle for 16 or 22 months before getting released. So even though I did grow a bit this last year, I'm three and a half years till it actually gets released. So it's time to grow into that.
And like Karn, Celesta is a unique name. Where does name come from?
So it's Latin for celestial or heavenly, and it's actually my mom found the name thanks to Google Translate. So is
really? I love that.
Oh yeah. No, because you're looking for a name. I was actually using a different name originally, which was kind of funny because it was a synonym for celestial, so it was the same kind of theme.
What was it?
Imperial, E-M-P-Y-R-E-A-L. Trademark issues.
Oh, sure.
So,
what, from the butter company or from wine too, or what?
You know, no comment.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Don't stir that up.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Yeah, right.
No, it's hilarious. The other day I was doing a trademark search, and they literally, when I was trying to, I hit them up to attempt to buy it or lease it. And then they, you know, I got cease and desisted like that. And then I was on the website a week ago, making sure all my blend names were not trademarked. So yeah, all that kind of fun stuff. And then they literally let that trademark expire that same month I hit them up to buy it.
Really?
But hey, we're Celesta now.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, it's so interesting. You got to do that. It's so funny. I was been talking to a couple like different mark attorneys over the years on the air, especially who ones who specialize like in beverage and production. And it's amazing how many people just don't even go to Google, much less trademark, registries. But just going to Google and seeing what's out there. I mean, I know of a wine here. This just happened a couple weeks ago. A big winemaker heard of a wine that is in Paso that has the same name. I even think they went to market first, but he's got a trademark. And so I don't even know if this person knows yet. You know what I mean? But like, this happens all too often.
Oh, yes. And I've been lucky. I mean, that situation wasn't super lucky, but then I had two blend names had a similar issue, but it was like a family-owned winery that I had actually had before and was familiar with Walla Walla. Nicest people ever. Yeah. Great situation. They were like, you know, hire a lawyer to do your stuff instead of doing it yourself. I was like, okay, noted, obviously. Yeah. And then it was send them some wine and, don't do it again. I was like, perfect. Yeah. That's the way in theory it should go. But
no, sure.
You know.
There were some big ones. I think if you go back and listen to the episode, the second one we did with Matt Trevison, Lene Colodo, where he had some things that were trademarked and someone was trying to use it. It was a pretty big name, like a huge California cult wine, and it was just like, dude, sorry, bro. I don't know what to tell you, man. I mean, right. That's why you go to the extent to mark something. But it is. It's one of those things. It's just one of those things. So, Celesta, you were downtown Paso.
Correct.
We recently had the blending lab on. That was your old home.
Yes, that is correct. So I was there for just under 2 years, something like that. So I launched the brand in, or at least for sales, fall 2020. So starting to sell my 17s, but couldn't really have a tasting room thanks to COVID for a bit. And then kind of stumbled into that downtown tasting room, which was, great location. It was also nice. I mean, it was kind of fit my aesthetic in terms of kind of like modern industrial interior kind of deal. And then, we knew we were going to do an estate winery and tasting room, but just, only took 5 years between permits and actually getting it done.
Does the foot traffic on that west side of Spring, is it as robust as, say, that east side of Spring, which is, of course, the square, the park?
No comment? No.
Yeah.
No, it was okay.
Yeah.
It was kind of like one of those, necessary evils.
And yeah.
It was like a transitionary period.
Sure.
So it was good exposure. And, it's right off 12th and Spring.
Yeah.
So it was like basically like having a big billboard.
Yeah. And you're next to some of the biggest restaurants.
Hotels too.
Sure.
So that's where Piclo and Paso Inn were super integral to, and also Hotel Cheval driving traffic for us. But I will say I definitely had to put more effort and time into marketing, getting traffic in the door when I was downtown. It's a different animal for sure.
No, yeah. And now we're at our estate site.
All on the estate, yeah. So we have so we're in the Tumble the Gap AVA, but like 2 miles or something east of downtown Templeton. And then yeah, so we have 35 acres of grapes now. I guess might be 37 after next year. And then basically most
of it. Mom wants more Chardonnay.
Funny you say that, because we end up doing a little bit more for that oh, reason.
I nailed it.
Because like, so like with the original planting.
I forgot, was that on me or off here when we were talking about your mom and the Chardonnay? That was off?
That's probably off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we were drinking the white that you're pouring, which is a beautiful Biennacino.
Yes.
That your mom wanted you to plant some Chardonnay.
Well, so we had our estate Chardonnay planted years before. We had like a half acre that was supposed to be a white, and this is like 9 years ago or something. I was like, I don't even want to make white at the time. I don't even want to make white wine, like, you know, whatever. And it was like, we couldn't get clean cuttings of some white Rhone. And she was like, Chardonnay. And I was like, sure, we might graft over it, but you know, who cares? Like at the time, I didn't care. But then, ended up the first year didn't get enough fruit for Chardonnay to fill the press. Co-fermented underripe Viognier works out beautifully. It's like a natural acid bump, keeps it medium-bodied, acid-driven. The goal is to make it not taste or smell like a Chardonnay or a Viognier. So that's all great, but then I realized just based on yields and whatnot, I could only do 70 cases a year, and I didn't really realize it till like the second or third year where I was like, oh, she took 7 cases, and that was like 10% of it. So I realized, I was like, okay, I can't sell out my white wine within 4 months. So we planned a little bit more, and then that's where the Biennacino Chardonnay came into play too, just to grow the white program.
That's not easy fruit to get either.
I'm very fortunate. My first boss, one of my really good friends and mentors, his name's Ian Fainer. He now works for the Miller family, but my first job was down at Lucas and Llewellyn in Buellton.
Oh yeah,
he was my boss or one of my bosses, and when he like moved to there, I realized I needed some more white fruit, and I was like, well, what am I actually passionate about in California? Like, I'm not as much about white Rhones, but I love all my friends. I mean, like that do Biennacino Chardonnay, like Ultima Thule, you know, Desperata, you know, Herman Story too. So I was like, and I also got lucky, and also Emmercy, they make a great one. Mm-hmm. But I got lucky, at least for what I want to make, where I'm in the middle of this L block, so like right in the middle, where like a lot of people are like, oh, it doesn't like ripen as well, but I'm like, that's exactly what I want. I want to make a high acid 12% alcohol Chardonnay. So that's awesome. And then, you know, kind of also the antithesis to how I treat my Chard VO from the estate. So, you know, all barrel aged or all barrel fermented barrel aged. I'm really happy with it.
It's fun, and I love seeing Paso winemakers play with, you know, some of these famed vineyards from even outside the area. And I don't think there's anything more famed or more designated, for that matter, than Biennacino. And to see, you know, kind of like the maverick mentality of a Paso winemaker put their hands on something like that, I think it's really cool, and it tastes beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's just such. It's one of my favorite vineyards, obviously, in the state.
For
you know,
sure.
I did a Syrah from the 19, and I don't know, maybe one day I might go back in there for. I see the cross that bridge when I get to it.
What, Pinot or what?
No, I love. So, like, I'm basically all state minus this, and then for the right cool climate vineyard Syrah, I'm a sucker, and I won't say no.
Yeah. So it's cool tasting a lot, whether it's like either North Coast or what people are doing, or like what York Mountain is doing right now with Syrah. I mean, crazy.
And they're cab too.
Oh, so yes. That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So really exciting. So how did you guys cross paths? How did you guys meet? You guys certainly aren't meeting today, right?
No, we probably first met. Well, you were working at Onyx.
Probably, yeah.
He was working at Onyx and then popped over. I think we were having a party for one of the other brands I was making wine for, end of the day, in Tin City. And that's probably where we first met. And then Brian was making his wines in Tin City for a short stint until his place was built. So, yeah, just got to know each other, became friends over those years. And now we source fruit from Calesta. Super stoked. The quality of the fruit and the wines we made from last year, the first year, were amazing. So we requested some more fruit this year.
So. Is he going to get it? Did you grant him that? Have we made
we'll
our
see.
Decisions?
I don't know if he can pay 30 grand a ton.
Yeah. Prices
ouch.
Went up.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So where did you guys both kind of cut your chops when it came to winemaking? How long you guys been both in the game? I mean, you said like, what, you're in your early mid-30s. How long you been making wines for?
So I've been making wine for almost a decade. I've been in the industry for over 20 years.
Yeah.
Doing other things. And I cut my teeth working over at Caliza. So Carl Bowker gave me my first harvest intern job back in 2015 after working for him for the entire year prior on my weekends for free, learning the business, doing
That's
all those
so
things.
That's so cool. That's such a cool story.
Yeah, just kind of worked my way through the ranks. And
what a great guy to learn from.
Yeah. And so it's really cool making the wine there because we made, you know, being an all-estate brand essentially. And then we started the End of the Day line, which is their sister label, which is all source fruit from in Paso. So really got to experience all of the different AVAs and kind of, you know, vineyards from all across this pretty large area. So, and very drastically different, you know, from the Willow Creek where that vineyard is to, you know, the Geneseo or Templeton Gap or Estrella, you know.
It truly is an industry that can welcome, and if you just try your hardest and meet the people and bust your ass, like, you can do this. And I think of, like, I mean, I started the Cork Dorks in 2010, right? So, I mean, I'm thinking of the interviews I was doing in 2015 and chatting with all these people. Here you were just an intern, just getting, you know, working for free. I mean, I remember doing that in radio. Working for free, saying yes to everything you could. And then here we are now sitting in you and your wife's own tasting room that was inhabited by some bigger names before you. I mean, that's a really neat story, and it's a really, like, attainable story. If you have a dream, you can capture it here.
Yeah, it takes a lot of hard work. You know, it takes a lot of passion. You got to love what you do. You got to understand that you're not going to make that much money along the way to, like, do it. You know, I left a great paying job, a great career to just dive headfirst into this.
What were you doing before?
You know, I worked for Trader Joe's for a long time. I worked in restaurants on the floor as, you know, a floor sommelier. And you know, you made decent money doing those things. And,
yeah.
And there was a lot of opportunity. But when my path came to, like, no, I don't want to be just selling wine anymore. I want to make wine. I didn't have any education in it. I just knew what I knew about wine. And so I wasn't going to go back to school for it. I was almost 30 at that point in time. And I'm like, I'm not going back to school. I have a degree and all these other things. And I'm just going to have to dive into it. And that was kind of how that fell. And we knew Carl and Pam from coming up to Paso often. We loved coming to this area just to wine taste or to
Where
visit.
Where are you from?
Son of Orange County originally.
Okay, cool.
Like Mishviejo.
Yeah.
And so Paso was easy to get to, and traveled up here a bunch, and, you know, getting that opportunity to just kind of pop in and start working on my weekends to get a feel for, like, hey, what is it that it takes to, like, make wine? And
almost like your neighbors did, Stanley and Elena. Same kind of thing, coming up here.
Same kind of thing.
And then how did you kind of figure out what you wanted to make? Was it just what you liked drinking? I mean, I guess you start there, right?
Yeah, you pretty much start there. I mean,
you
obviously
get your hands on.
Yeah, well, once we started the brand, we were more focused on it than just, like, we're not just here to make wine. We're very focused on where our fruit comes from and who we work with. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it starts. It's like, well, we like to come into Paso, we like to come into the Santa Barbara area, all up this way, not just for the great wines, but the community and the people and just this paradise that we get to live in. And you know, it's very Rhone centric with, you know, some nice areas to do Bordeaux, and we can kind of do everything here. And that's kind of what we do at Carn. So we do Albarino, Vermentino, Cabernet, Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, Carignan, Graciano, and that's growing. Cunoise will be added this year. So it's just,
that's a fun one.
It's just a matter of, like, finding those vineyards that are growing the fruit in the right areas that we can make these amazing wines from. And so that's more where we're focused on, is getting really, really good fruit. We only work with organic, sustainable growers. And it's, those are all really things that are really important to us and to our brand.
Let me ask you, Brian, also Southern California.
Correct.
Because I came from Agora, Thousand Oaks, and you're from Thousand Oaks.
That is correct. So, like, what, half my childhood, Woodland Hills.
And, okay, yeah.
Then we moved to Thousand Oaks, and that's actually the beginning of what got me into wine, because my parents got me into wine because they like drinking it. And then we ended up planting Cab in our backyard. And it's like a...
In T.O.? Stop it.
So it was, there wasn't an AVA there back then. I feel like there...
Is there now?
There might be. Okay, there's like this place
Greater
called Hidden
Los
Valley.
Angeles.
Yeah, right, yeah, Hidden Valley.
It's like hidden. It's basically kind of hidden. But also, you're just not like, you're going to see those AVAs really anywhere outside of those places anyway. But yeah, no, we made some, you know, mediocre garage family cab for, from when I was like 12.
How fun.
You still
have bottles of it? You ever drink them? Are they good? Are they garbage?
I haven't had them in a while. Okay. It's like, it's very okay.
Yeah.
And my God, it's aged surprisingly well.
That's cool.
But the labels are one of the most embarrassing things I've ever been associated with. I have no say in it, but it's literally like a miniature schnauzer and two golden retrievers in front of a vineyard in like a really crappy, like impressionist art kind of style.
Like windows. That's like a perfect garage label.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like garage wine label.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But no, that's what got me into it initially. And I tagged along with my parents when we go to like Santa Barbara County or Sonoma to wine taste, and you know, I'd do my Game Boy and just hang out in the vineyards, and then just kind of did that for fun
with them
when I was growing up.
And what a great story. I've heard more of these where like people, like I think of like Victor Abascal from Vines on the Mary Crest, where where do nuns live? A convent.
Yes.
And there was like this hill that they never went. He just went and started planting, you know, and that's where the name came from. And, or I think even like, was it Kevin Usola who used to live down there doing some weird stuff? So some other person in Southern California, like around Topanga or wherever, was doing some grapes. And people are down to try it. They're down to do it. And it's I died in.
Say it's not the best cab you'll have, but it was very educational and, you know, spurred the interest. And then like by the time I got to college, I was at the time really set on doing accounting and finance.
Yeah.
Me the same.
Yeah, you know, and
that's
great education. I was making cider for fun because like my best guy friend has like hardcore celiac disease, so like you know, I was like, you know, it's cheaper to make cider than buy beer or buy wine or buy cider, you know. So I was doing that in college while I was doing accounting and finance jobs. I didn't realize how much I didn't want to do that until I actually graduated, and then I
I want to make some real money.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, like you know, I'll sell out for 15-20 years. At the time was investment banking, and I'll circle back to something that actually makes me happy when I'm like 40.
Yeah.
And then like I said, like 6 months, and thank God like my parents let me move home. I gave my apartment, I quit, give my apartment, moved back, and then I was like, okay, what do I actually enjoy? Wine, cider to a certain extent, but it was more like something creative where I can be outside, tangible product I enjoy. And just I don't know, just being outside and loving
that. You still make cider?
Not recently.
Ciders are fun.
Maybe one day. My biggest issue is focus. So it's being like, okay, make the best wine possible, sell said wine, grow the best grapes possible, sell said grapes. Same for the Truffle Project too, because that's essentially.
I want to talk about that in a second. What do you find to be harder or more of a steeper learning curve? Is it the farming or is it the winemaking?
I would actually go, it's more the sales side of farm, or I guess more like the general cash flow of farming and also the general cash flow of winemaking more than the actual
business.
The business side's more complex to me than
the creative.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I'm dealing with that right now as I took like my broadcasting and went independent.
Right.
And now you're like, oh my gosh, now I'm a small business. And then I've literally had, you know, advertisers on my show go like, you didn't invoice me for this month. I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm supposed to get paid for this. Oh, you know,
it's I know. And that is my downfall. Like, cause like we have some clients that make wine in our facility and stuff. And it's like, you know, I should be invoicing Barrel Storage every month. Do I? Probably not.
Yeah.
For
no,
now.
I hear you. Yeah.
But, you know, we're a small team where it's like still like me and then my dad helps me at the business side. And then it's assistant winemaker, Dayton, who's awesome. But it's pretty much just mainly the three of us on a daily basis.
And I was looking at your website. You have a lot of topography. You have beautiful rolling hills there.
And that's where we kind of fell in love with the property. So the whole thing started where I was actually working, well, down in Buellton at a Pinot Chard place and then moved here to work for Epic Estate Wines. And then I was like, okay, this is where I want to be. For the same reason Andy said, it's like you can grow and make whatever you want here and no one bats an eye for the most part. And it's like Napa's great, but, you know, I like not being tied down to making, you know, mainly a couple varieties.
What were you doing at Epic?
I was a cellar hand. Cool. Yeah. So I did... I worked there.
It's a beautiful cellar to be a cellar hand.
Oh, well, and that was the best thing because I was a lab tech before, and I like kind of got some cellar experience, but that was the absolute best place for me to learn the cellar from Zach.
He's awesome.
Because I mean, it just they kind of roll how I am. I'm pretty anal when it comes to sanitation and everything, and they do everything by best practices, and it shows. I mean, it shows in the wine, you know.
Yeah.
And also just great people. They're
great people.
Always one of my favorite wineries. But then from there I went, so I kind of, because I didn't go to like Davis or Cal Poly or something, I felt like I was kind of behind. I got a second bachelor's in ag science, but like I still felt behind everyone who actually studied viticulture and enology. So I did like 3 years where I did Harvest here and then Harvest Australia back and forth. And then, weirdly enough, I was a commercial kombucha brewer in between. So I do 4 months in each place for the most part.
Oh, wow.
So I did that for 3 years. And then I've been fully settled here for 6 now or something like that.
Given that background in finance and ag science, how do those disciplines kind of shape what you're doing now? with the farming, with the winemaking.
I mean, it basically tells me, you know, you shouldn't invest in the wine industry. No, it goes a long way because this business truly is a labor of love and passion because you're never going to get rich quick. So it really takes time and, you know, kind of vineyard came first for us and it's like, okay, cool. 7 or 8 years and you start breaking even and it gets a little bit easier. And then, you know, for the longest time, I was like, I don't want to build a winery and tasting room because, you know, that's a whole other financial undertaking with a bunch of debt. And then it started to make sense when there's really not that many places to rent around here. And also you have the property and it's a great experience with the people to be out in the vineyard. So we pulled the trigger.
This truffle program is really interesting, and it really sets you apart. It's unique. Talk about this, what you guys are doing, connecting people with truffles.
For sure. Yeah, so we honestly stumbled into it. So we got this piece of property, and the original thing was like, oh, 10 acres of grapes. It's a hobby vineyard for my parents. As my dad still teaches at UCLA, but he's kind of ish, retired-ish. So it's like, oh, 10 acres of grapes. I'll make wine from it and, you know, go from there. But then for economies of scale, labor, equipment, all that fun stuff, it snowballed into an initial planting of 30 acres. And now we're at 35 for the grapes. But it's cool because I get to sell said fruit to people like Andy. But yeah, the truffles, we did soil pits all around the property to see where was best to plant grapes. And one kind of lower elevation that was like flatter, we're like, okay, cool. Like, I mean, it's still great for grapes, but we have 30 plus acres that are better up above that are steeper slopes, not in a frost zone. So we're just like, all right, good to know. But then we just kind of fell into it because we got approached by a guy who got a grant from the state of California to inoculate these little oak tree, you know, saplings at a nursery down in AG. And then we were the only ones who actually bought them and planted them. So we ended up planting 10 acres, 2,200 something trees, which also we didn't know at the time. I think we're like one of the largest, I mean, I guess in the country, but like for sure. I'm basically one of the largest in the country to my knowledge. There's like, there's one orchard in NorCal that's like a similar size, a smaller one in Oregon that's producing. And then I guess someone around here probably is.
So you plant these trees
that they're already inoculated at a nursery. You plant these trees. It looks like, and honestly, looks like an olive tree orchard, just because it's this kind of oak tree. Use just the leaves look like olive trees.
But it's an oak tree.
It is an oak tree. Quercus ilex, holly oaks, Mediterranean oak. You can grow them on other kinds of trees too. But for us in this climate, it made the most sense because you know we almost dry farm the vineyard. Like we dry farm until we can't, and then even for the truffles, it's been kind of wild. It used a hell of a lot less water than. I mean, even grapes to a certain extent, depending on who's farming them, or nuts, or anything like that, or olives for that matter. But yeah, it was just, we kind of learned that, so we grow the Black Winter Perigord truffles, so it's like, they love the same soils and little climate that the Rhone, especially the Rhone grapes do. So it loves a soil pH of about 8. And like that same like calcareous soil that has great drainage and also great water retention works beautifully with that. So it's just kind of nice and kind of just serendipity where we kind of fell into it. And it's, you know, there's 400 wineries around here. How do you differentiate? We make wine to A, share with people, but B, also have with food. So it just kind of went hand in hand. And thankfully my mom is a lovely chef and she was the one pushing for it. So
are these all year long or what?
So we harvest mid-December through mid-February for the most part, and we have consulting dogs that come down from Washington for the most part.
I've seen these.
Yeah.
These dogs like do demos and stuff. It's really interesting.
And they're awesome.
Super cool.
I know. Yeah,
yeah. Super cool. He put on a whole show. Back in February, there's a lot of people, and we found several like sizable truffles when we were out there. It's really cool to do.
Dang.
Yeah, and then we basically have just been using it to like A, for our own events, B, we now sell to wine club members, which is fun, and then C, it's like we sell to like, well, locally Six Test Kitchen takes almost everything we'll have, and then Bell's in Los Alamos, so it's, yeah, not a bad gig.
Damn.
Our truffles
are going to the Michelin stars.
Well, yeah.
That's pretty cool. So who is this Pierre Sorzat? Am I saying that right?
Yes. He basically wrote the textbook on truffle cultivation. He was a professor in France. He just recently passed away, unfortunately. But he literally, he's probably walked on like every commercial producing truffle orchard in the world.
Including yours?
Including, oh yeah. So
there was this collaboration with...
Correct. And it was so fun. I mean, it was so fun with him just because like he was our consultant, but it was more of just like almost like a friends thing where he'd fly out once or twice a year and, you know, hang out for 3 or 4 days.
Nice.
You know, and just drink wine and eat good food. And then we just pull root samples, check on that.
Did he know a lot about Paso aside of you or not really? So no. This was his
first time in Paso. Like,
he must have loved it.
He'd, I honestly don't even know if he'd really been to, I mean, he'd probably only been to California for like truffle conference stuff. That's probably about it. So yeah.
Do you like wine?
Yeah, oh,
yeah. No. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, like, we'd get, like, Jersey Mike sandwiches for lunch, and he'd be asking for, like, you know, white burgundy with it.
Right, yeah.
So he liked wine.
So the truffle program integrating with the wine, obviously they're separate, so there's really not any kind of, like, interplanetary struggles or challenges with that, right?
Correct. Yeah, they're separate until we're harvesting the truffles, and then it becomes wine and truffle food pairing kind of deal.
Yeah.
And we work with local chefs, which is a lot of fun, too.
And then how do your customers and fans of Calesta get a chance to take part in this?
So it's mainly checking the website. So we have an idea of what the truffle harvest season is, but it's kind of, we're still learning to a certain extent, and also it's weather-dependent when it comes to rain during winter when we're actually harvesting them.
Yeah.
But it's mainly like mid-December through mid to late February. And then we're usually running events every 2 weeks or so. We'll see. Once we start training our own dogs, it'll probably be every weekend.
Wow.
But yeah, right now it's basically the only, like, the best company by far is they're out of Seattle, because they do native truffle hunts up in the Pacific Northwest. And then they basically do every black Paragord truffle orchard on the coast. You know, we keep it to like 15 people, the hunt or whatever.
What a special, like, cool excursion to do that you can do here in Paso.
Yeah.
It's super cool. You should do it. If you want to do it.
Yeah. If you're listening, you got to check this out.
It's amazing. Like, it's just such a great experience. And yeah, it's when you dig down and like pull that truffle out and like you smell the hole, like all the things, like, you got to do it.
Is this like a lot of walking? Is this for like, is it like hiking, or how do you, what does it entail?
A very mild hike, if anything. It's mostly flat, minus one little hill. And once you get above that hill, it's either flat or all downhill from there.
Yeah.
At least on the way back. So it's
very accessible, attainable for many levels.
We've had people with, like, I mean, not that I would recommend this, but people with a broken foot and a boot walk it, you know? It's nothing strenuous.
And then when you find something, do you like, oh, to stick this in my pocket? Or like, do you have a little, like, a little basket? Like,
so
what
it's
do you
do? Okay, like, honestly, I used to stick them in my pocket because I wasn't prepared. Like, I never really thought it would work. It's so, like, the first time, like we found, like, a little nugget the first year after. It was, like, 5 years after we planted them. And then the second year was, like, I was like, crap, we just pulled 2 pounds out, and, you know, I was out of pocket space. And, you know, now it's a much more professional, legitimate setup. We have a little backpack with all the little hand trowels, and we have, like, little markers where you mark them to find stuff later. And
then what do you do? Yeah. So, like, you dig and find them, or are they sticking out of the ground? You dig?
Well, occasionally they can be, like, breaching the soil. That's more so probably in Oregon, where it's a little bit cooler. Here, it's, like, they're all in the top, ideally, 12 inches of the soil. But it's – the dog tells you – like in like a, you know, 12 inch radius where that'll be, but then that thing can be anywhere from the top foot to like way deep.
And are you just kind of gently scaling, or because you want to pierce them, right? You probably, how do you do it?
So it's that's something rake? Where, like, you know, if you would have talked to, you know, 15-year-old Brian, be like, yeah, I drive a forklift 80% of my days, and digging up truffles out of the dirt and sticking, laying on the ground. Yeah, so literally the dog will tell you, I use my hands a little bit to dig, stick my head in the hole, smell for it from there. I dig with my hands because I don't risk scratching it, but you know,
smart.
It's only, it also probably takes me twice as long a lot of the time, but at least once you
and
scratch
then you, them, once you learn that scent, you can dig in there and go, oh, it's got to be right here.
Anyone who knows what, you know, black truffle smell like, it is very obvious when you smell it, the dirt just reeks of it.
And
you
it's
know?
The same as it in the ground, like as it's,
oh,
it's
God,
being
yeah.
shaved on a...
Even more magnified.
Oh.
And like even when you pull the truffle out, the dirt will still smell like that for like a week or so.
And then when you take this truffle, you take it back to your kitchen. What do you do with it? You wash it? What do you do?
So I cold water and a toothbrush. And
really?
Gently scrub away. And then I dry them a little bit, weigh them. And then also, like, what's a little bit different about us, it's like they're on a plate that night, you know? So they're on a plate that night, whereas everything you're getting from, you know, Europe or Australia is, well, actually, no, mainly Europe, it's like a week, 10 days old. So it's like already depreciated like 30-40% that you've lost all these flavors and aromas.
Were the chefs beating down your door to get access to this?
That's where it's the easiest thing to sell. And it's like, it's nice for me.
Yeah, right.
For now. But like right now we're only getting like a pound an acre. And then in the future, a bad year is like a couple pounds an acre and a good year is 40 pounds an acre.
But you better be eating good at Six and Bell's anytime you walk in there, I imagine.
Yeah. Or even like my own, like I do like you know, truffle cacio e pepe mac and cheese mashup thing. That's kind of my jam. If I'm, you know, if I'm trying to actually date someone, that's what they get.
I was just gonna, it's so funny you say that. I was just saying, like, what a cool way to, like, just, like, flex, you know? Oh, let me go back, baby, and get some truffles out the backyard.
Right, you know. Casual Wednesday in February.
I know, right? Yeah. So is this like a thing that, like, because we just had some rain, like, you're going to be out there, like, tomorrow? Or is
so
it like...
we're actually – so in terms of – right now, it's actually the 2 months of a lot of farming for those. So it's – we'll fertilize, but it's like, you know, it's a, what, a kelp mix and some blanking on the other one right now, even though I just was emailing about it earlier. And then, you know, pruning – and we're also going to re-inoculate the soil a bit. So we have 2 months to get basically all the farming for the year done for the most part, other than mowing. And we're just kind of hitting that right now. So the season kind of ended probably 2 months ago now, I should say. So we're kind of just farming, let summer happen, kind of babysit, keep mowing, and then, you know, go from there and then starting and harvesting in December.
So exciting. What is this wine that you just poured for us, my man? What is this, Andy?
Oh, so this is a Block 10 Syrah. So I do usually at least two Syrahs a year. It's my favorite grape to drink and also make. So this one's my favorite Syrah that we make on a year-to-year basis. Like when we planted it, like before anything went in the ground. So we use Coastal Vineyard Services. So it's Kevin Wilkinson. Essentially, we've been working with since day one.
And he's boss. He's awesome.
Absolute best. So he was like, this is your best Syrah.
This is your,
like,
flagship. This
it was
is
basically
it.
Like, I mean, he was like, this is your Block B.
I was just going to say that, dude. Yeah. You've been inside my brain. Yeah. Get out.
He's just saying that because he's trying to sell me some Syrah from this block right now. So he's just building it.
Like
up.
I said, 30 grand a ton. 30 grand a ton.
This is your Block B, my man. I love it. Well, to me, like, Block B is just like, it's like my absolute.
But it's pretty wild. He literally called it before we even ripped anything. That's, you know? So we, like, colloquially call it Kevin's Block. But it's just... when, like, depending on the year, I do one single block, if not two, but, like, this one will kind of always be a single block because it just makes itself.
Just beautiful.
It's so naturally balanced, which is really nice.
What do you think you're willing to pay for a ton of this?
Not $30,000.
I'll cut you a deal at 20.
Cut you a little deal. We had a wine right before this. It was one of yours. It was beautiful. What was that?
So that was our Lopi Grenache. So 100% Grenache from the Lopi Vineyard. So Lopi is right over off Vineyard Drive, right next to Denner. Mm. So Brian Lopez purchased that property a few years back. And yeah, it's really the only first and only time that we'll get Grenache off that block. But it was just so special in that vintage. That
beautiful wine.
That vineyard throws off great fruit,
yeah,
and the wine's
amazing.
It's so. Like not you don't see it on labels very often, but the best people, like, they only sell to the best winemakers.
Tell me about your label, Andy. It's so cool. Like, the back has this.
It's a Cairn.
It is. It totally is. It's like a silhouette of a Cairn.
So
rocks.
The idea with the label is
awesome.
It's a full wrap.
I see it now.
It's like a full wraparound label, right?
Yeah.
And so when it comes together. When it comes together, if you call it the front or the back, it forms our Cairn. And so the idea behind the label was just to kind of provide, you know, all the basic necessary things, you know, the brand name, the name of the wine, the vintage, obviously all the legal jargon, some fun things about the wine.
What's pretty cool, you know what I like about your presentation here is that the back label and the front label are often so distinguished, right? Mm-hmm. And often everything is supposed to be on the front label. No matter where I spin this in a 360, I am looking at something unique and I see brand expression in all these different places. It's a really smart label.
Yeah, so the idea with the label is, you know, just like a stack of rocks, right? For the Cairn, it takes a lot of balance to stack those rocks. The label's balanced and the wines will be balanced. So
yeah.
In all of our wines, there's not one thing that'll stick out, or, you know, or it's not going to be too tannic. It's not going to be too acidic. It's going to have balance to it. And that's important.
If anything can go wrong, it can go wrong on bottling day. It will go wrong on bottling day. How do these labels pop out with the labeling truck and stuff? Are these good?
It's not too bad. Yeah.
Nice.
So we'll cross that bridge in our third vintage that we're bottling next month.
Cool.
But in the first vintage, we went right on the vacuum belt. Second vintage, couldn't get it to go on straight with the vacuum belt. Good thing we have a rotary labeler on our truck. So got it lined up, went right on. So this year will be the, you know, third year's the charm of, like.
So you're 10 years into this game. Were there aspects of this journey that even still kind of either surprise you or throw you for a loop or really make you go, oh man, I was not ready for this?
You know, for us in this brand with Karn, and this is always going to be a challenge, we don't have any of our own vineyards. We're not lucky enough to have an estate. And so sourcing fruit has been difficult because we, you know, get into contracts with vineyards and we love the wine. We love the grapes. We love what they're doing. And then they sell. So then we lose that vineyard and we're like, damn, we've just made this amazing wine for a couple years and now we're showing it to our customers and now we can't make wine from there anymore. So our hope is, in starting essentially last year and now moving forward with some of the vineyards we're sourcing fruit from, like Calesta, is that we're working with people that aren't going to be selling their property now. At least not for a long time.
Right. It's so funny because, I mean, one of the names that we talked about earlier, and I don't even know if it's public yet, so I won't mention it, but, I mean, I can imagine you getting some, it was really famed fruit, some really well-farmed, beautiful fruit, and now it's been acquired, and you're like, ugh, now I guess we ain't getting that contract, babe.
Exactly. And so it's tough because, you know, it's those are amazing sites and just, you know, that's always been the toughest thing for us. You know, otherwise I've been in this industry a long time, so I'm not really surprised by anything else. Of course, things can catch you off guard, but that's kind of happening in Paso a lot. You know, like, people are aging out and there's no one to take over the business, or even if there are people who take over the business, they don't want the business. And so it's like, it's an understandable decision to do, but it's challenging for brands like ours because now we're trying to pivot and, like, you know, position ourselves to still make amazing wines, because like I said earlier, we're hyper focused on where our fruit comes from. We're not just looking to make wine. Our wines are going to be distinguished. Our wines are going to be amazing, and it's all from the growers and what they're doing, because we're just getting out of the way in the winery, letting the fruit speak. So we got to get that amazing fruit to make some great wines. So
now it's like, when you are calling up contracts, like he's calling up Ryan, like, you guys aren't selling anytime soon, right? Like, not like 10, 12 years, right?
Oh, I was like, not this year.
Yeah, so hopefully we can stay with who we're working with for a little while. And, you know, that the dream one day would be to have our own place. And, you know, even if it's not where we're making all of our wine from, just but to have a spot where our home is, our winery is, our brand is, you know, a small vineyard, you know, where we can build out a hospitality center for all the people who have supported us for a long time and just kind of paid, you know, give back to all of that. And I mean, that's the dream, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we're trying to achieve that right now. We sit and we look at the Ford dealership on Highway 46 and, you know, dream about those dreams. So
back to, like, strategizing growth. I mean, obviously we're mainly DTC here, that direct to consumer model, but it's be nice to see these beautiful bottles with beautiful wine inside on a lovely wine list, or perhaps maybe in a market that you may have some familiar, Orange County or something like that. I don't know. How do you kind of work that aspect of it? Do you like to do things like that beyond wine lists, or is it like, no, it's just 100% DTC?
We're not 100% DTC, but as we're starting, that's kind of how we're going. We're on several lists here in town, and that's growing. We have contacts, but we're so small right now that wines don't really fit that, because if we get onto a list somewhere and they love it and then they sell it and then they come calling for more and I'm like, it's gone, they're upset, you know? And so like, when you lose that placement, it's pretty much gone. So like, anybody that's in that distribution market will tell you that, like, you can't ever run out of wine. You have to have wine. So when we have those placements, then we got to kind of hold cases back and reserve for said placements. But still, the problem still arises where if they're having success selling it and they like it, we don't make that much of it. And so, you know, the low pie that we talked about, 75 cases, that's it.
Oof.
You know, and we sold over half of that and to our, you know, probably 60% of that already just to our wine club upon release.
That's just a few barrels.
It's three barrels.
Yeah, man.
So it's not a lot of wine. And so we're exploring that as we grow, because we do want to be on restaurant lists. There's lots of amazing restaurants that our wines will go really well with the cuisine that they're serving. And it's, you know, that's part of our game of, like, being able to grow and do that. And especially where we're from in Orange County, there's a lot of folks out in the Valley, Bakersfield, Fresno, that have been big supporters so far. That we're connecting with that want our wines on their list.
Good for you. Wine's beautiful. So, yeah, it's awesome. It's so fun because I haven't had a real, you know, big dip into either of these brands where I have many of them in front of me, and it's really exciting. I mean, you guys make some fantastic wines. Brian, let me ask you, as far as Calesta and that growth, do you desire to see some of these, you know, at the restaurants back in Thousand Oaks, Westlake, some nice restaurants down there, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, right now, you know, I'm in a hand... Like, up until right about now, I've been self-distributing to, like, 10 or 15 restaurants and shops all over the state. But it's, like, I've been doing, like, two loops, being, like, dropping wine for the accounts. But, like, you know, I was naive in terms of thinking that a bunch of people like not locally wanted to buy directly from the winery. So I just got in with Kimberly Jones Selections. So it's like that's been the biggest dream, because it's like I've been pouring for people, and I kind of stopped with restaurants and shops because I was like, they'd always ask like, oh, who do I order with? And I'm like, me.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, call me when you have representation. So like,
so
now
interesting.
It's like,
wow.
I know.
Let me ask you, because and this is a really inside baseball question, but I still think interesting to those who are listening. When you have something like, so Kimberly Jones is a pretty, you know, small and just like boutique kind of distributor, and the names that are on there are huge. I mean, it's like, I know Epic's on there in some of their books, but they also do JNL too. But I know that Saxum and some of these other ones are. How do you ever worry about, oh my God, I'm going to get lost in a book this exclusive, or the same ones that carry them also carry me? That's the bomb. Like, how do you look at it?
Honestly, their sales, I mean, I love everyone there. Like, Kimberly is so cool.
They're really good at what they do.
They are. But, like, their sales reps are also such cool people. But the thing is, my kind of philosophy was it's more of a way to actually execute sales than it is to, like, rely on them to sell my stuff. So that's where kind of in the...
Okay.
Like, I just kind of want to grow fairly aggressively. I mean, to get to that, you know, double in 3 years, 1 to 2,000 cases thing, it's like and also having my wine shops and restaurants is also kind of like marketing advertising. So I'm kind of down to be out on the road selling, and it just gives me credibility. And
when they say who's your representation, you're like, boom,
exactly.
Kimberly Jones,
place order through Kimberly. yeah. No, so it goes a long way.
Nice.
But and like, that's where like I love the reps and like I will do the work with or ride along with them, but like, dude, who's gonna sell my wine better than me,
right?
You know? That's where I'm like, I am totally aware of it, and I, you know, thank God I'm actually passionate about what I do, and
yes,
it's like, you know, I'm down to go to, you know, five accounts and pour, because it's just gets the name out there, get it out there wholesale, hopefully convert them to DTC over time. But it's more just to, yeah, get the name out there for sure.
Yeah, you got to make that sacrifice and get on the road and do that, especially for newer brands. You know, we don't hold the names that, you
we
know,
don't have a marketing budget.
Yeah, we don't have a marketing budget, or we don't have the prestige of like the Saxums and things that like have done that already for themselves.
How much of it is just being out and about? I mean, you mentioned you and your wife have a 5-year-old. You can't be out socializing all the time. But man, when you're rubbing shoulders Wednesday at Wine Merchant and you're popping up to the bar at, you know, Alchemist Garden or, you know, In Bloom or any of these places, it helps. You know what I mean? When people see you out and about, how do you kind of manage that and work that in? Or can you do it at, you know, baseball games when, you know, your kids, you know, in a year or two playing Little League? I don't know.
You do it at those things for sure. Family events, because let's just be blunt, this area is full of wine industry people, and so across the board, doesn't winemakers, marketers, salespeople, it doesn't matter. So you're always rubbing shoulders with people. But you know, last night we went out to Libretto.
Nice.
Karn is a big supporter of Libretto, and we're members there, and so members night last night, and yeah, it's the who's who of people in town, and speaking of venues, like, that's just an amazing venue to be at.
Yeah.
And the quality of music is just, it's going through the, you know, it's just growing exponentially. It's just getting better and better and better and better. And to think you could top what's already been there,
you know,
it's just another, you know, just another beautiful thing that we have here in Paso, that we want to support. But yeah, it's tough, you know, like, we got childcare, you know. Luckily, both of our parents live locally.
Nice, that's good.
So they love Blessing. Being around Keys. Yeah, it's great. So
Keys, but, that's a cool name. I like that.
Yeah, Keys is our son's name. And
hey, spell it K-E-Y-S.
K-E-Y-E-S.
Cool.
And he's in charge of doing the sign out front with the Karn.
Yeah, he's in charge of putting it up. He's in charge of taking it down. He's in charge of delivering the wine boxes to people when they're, you know. He knows how to use a dolly. He's got his own little baby forklift at home that he can drive. And
5 years old must be a really fun age.
Oh, yeah.
They're really starting to get super curious and talking. I mean, you know, obviously they're talking it too, but like what they're saying is really starting to come together, make sense. I remember, I feel like when was the first birthday party you remember for yourself? For me, it's 5. Like, I don't have a whole lot of memories at 2, 3, and 4.
No.
But 5 is some solid memories I got.
Yeah, you know, think kindergarten, you know, like that's kind of where your memories kind of really kick in. You might have little things here or there, but yeah, the age is amazing. you're talking speaking, the conversations, right, of just like things he talks about, things I come home and, you know, we're building something or they're putting something together and how he's learning how to use tools and like, it's just super cool.
Yeah, my dad would, this is one of the coolest things, this is before, you know, even like VHS, like cameras, like your camcorders, but he would just record reading stories to me when I was that age. So I have like old cassettes of him reading books and I mean, I couldn't shut up then. It's like I'm asking him questions about what he's reading to me, but just to be able to listen to these things, I mean, you know, your voice when you're five and the conversations that you're having with your dad and, you know, it's just really, really cool. So must be some really fun times that you're kind of, you know, executing right now.
Yeah. I mean, think of the industry that we're in, right? All the cool things, forklifts and the machinery and just in the vineyards with the tractors. And
yeah.
And then that's what he's into, you know. My father-in-law was an engineer. And so, like, I think there's some of that brain in there. And just it's just super cool. Like, so he comes and helps when we process. I mean, he helps in all regards. Not that he's super helpful.
Right. Yeah, no, of course.
He's five.
He can sort through.
He's sitting there probably eating more grapes than he is getting rid of things we don't want. But, you know, it's just cool. And like, that's just the business that we have, you know,
yeah.
and it's.
But is he going to be a vineyard guy or a cellar guy?
I don't know yet. You know, like he takes into the cellar, but right now I would say he's more of a vineyard guy. He's more the outside, wants to be in the dirt
and, yeah,
you know, doing those things.
So cool. So are you out and about, Brian? Like, what are you? Are you single? Are you? You mentioned dating earlier. Are you trying to like get out there? What's your story?
Yeah.
should I touch on to some super awkwardness? Are you like getting a divorce right now or something? We'll edit this out.
May as well be. Yeah,
oh, okay. We'll edit this out.
No, I don't give a shit.
Oh, really?
Okay. It's all good. No, it's funny. No,
Andy's
it's
looking
like,
at me like, no, I'm turning red. Like, holy.
Oh, no, it's all good. No,
and
it's
I'm
like,
brown.
Well, that question's hilarious. It's usually like, do you have kids of your own? I'm like, none that I know of.
Yeah.
No, I'm, you know, married to my business right now. I'll say that. You know, I was from LA and I had like a 8-year relationship down there and, mm-hmm. you know, she was TV and I end up in wine. So that obviously didn't work out. Then on to an Australian and, that, you know, believe it or not, is difficult being 10,000 miles away. I'm busy enough with work and when it happens, it happens.
Are you social though? I mean, are you getting out? Are you doing all these things? You're going out? Like what are some places that hot spots you like to go kind of hit up and see what's up at?
Honestly, I spend a lot of time at, Wines on Main in Templeton now, which is so, so grateful that's there.
Me too.
Then honestly, I go to Via Caravaggio a lot cause they're my neighbors and you know, they serve Ancient Ale and I love that beer. And also love the pizzas and I love them.
That's cool. That's where we see each other.
Yeah, that's where we see each other like every Tuesday.
Well, family friendly restaurant, right? And so we have our
that's
three bar seats
walk.
That we can the market walk and you know, Keys is five. He loves pizza, so what is it every Tuesday? Every Wednesday?
Yeah, every Tuesday is industry night. So
when I was 5 years old, I was probably cutting up like Pizza Huts or things like that. So to be five and having pizza like that, that's pretty badass.
Expensive taste.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Pony Club as well. I frequent a good amount.
Oh, there you go. Cool.
Because like you know,
you like cocktails.
I do, but I'm still more into wine. I don't know. I didn't like the people there. You know, I've just known them forever. And
so when you go to a bar, what are you going to order? You're going to order a glass of.
During harvest, I'm ordering beer.
Yeah.
During summer, usually beer as well. Otherwise, I'm probably getting just international wine because it's the hardest thing to find around here.
Totally.
You know. Buy the glass, or you know, if I'm with friends, put a bottle.
What about you? You're pulling up, posting up at the bar. What are you ordering?
We're probably starting with a cocktail.
Me too.
You know, that's part of my history, you know, bartending. And I kind of came up in the, you know, what I would consider like the golden age of craft cocktails and like that things we were doing down
the AMF
south.
Was invented.
You know, the classics.
Yeah. You know, like when back in the time where like you couldn't just go to like every bar in town and get a good drink, you know. And usually we're starting with a cocktail, but if not, it's sparkling.
Yeah.
You know, all the way. Love a good sparkling. We live on that constantly. So if they don't have a full bar, yeah, sparkling's the key. But if they have a bar, if we're going to Alchemist, like you mentioned in Bloom, the Hatch, you're going to places like that, you're you're getting a cocktail first.
Yeah. Yep. I remember we would drink some crazy stupid stuff back in the day. It wasn't even an AMF is way up there. But I think they called it a nuclear iced tea. And pretty much it was a Long Island, but instead of Coke, it was Midori.
Oh,
so it just, and it, I mean, it just looks like you're drinking antifreeze. And then you wake up the next day wondering, like, what the hell even was going on? And, you know, yeah, so, I mean, we just drank some stupid stuff. But when you talk about cocktails now, thank God I'm more refined and more gentleman than ever. And I do love a good Manhattan or, you know, something like that, like a classic yeah. cocktail.
Going with something classic's great. You know, it's simple, but well done margarita is just
yes.
like... Yeah. The key for where we live, right? It's so warm most of the year that when we're getting done, we're, you know, working with big wines all day, nothing like just a fresh, crisp, like yeah. salty, you know, margarita.
So true.
That's just like
especially when one's
so
done just right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
good. This has been so much fun. Let's talk about how folks can taste both these brands. Karn, located here just as you start going east off the 46. We're right off now. I will tell you, Google told me to keep going through Golden Hill like I was just going to pull over to the right off the road. You cannot do that. You need to make a right on Golden Hill. You follow that. I wouldn't call it a traffic circle. It's like a traffic figure eight.
Yeah.
Follow it around. Then you make
the dog bone.
There you go. Follow the dog bone around. And then you make an easy left on Thule.
Thule.
And you will be right here. You're right next to Brochelle. You're sandwiched between Brochelle and Top, which are some pretty fun neighbors.
Yep, that's the best spot to be. You can book reservations straight off our website. There's a reservation link there. That's usually the best way. But you can email us. You can call. You can text us. The phone line on the website, you can text that as well just to make it easy. And we can do it that way. We are by appointment, but we do take walk-ins if you're in the area and you're lucky enough that we don't have a group. But if you've been here before, our tasting space is really small. It's about 300 square feet, if that. So if we do have another group, it's really hard, but yeah.
But you do a great job of the spot. It looks really, really sharp. You got big, beautiful chairs and couches. You have a little lounge over here. Georgie made himself all too comfortable. I apologize for that over there.
He's fine.
We were talking earlier about dogs jumping on furniture.
Yes.
And then I was like, no, I don't let my dog do that. And of course, we get recording. I look over there. I'm like, holy shit, Georgie's sitting like a little cinnamon roll on the chair. And he's looking at me now like, you mother. Aww. Can't believe you just dined me out. Beautiful wines.
Thanks.
Brian, how do people taste the wonderful wines of Calesta?
So we are open ideally by appointment, but we also take walk-ins. And then we're, you know, 11 to 5 Thursday through Monday and then Tuesday, Wednesday by appointment. But, you know, we're there anyway, so people come in anyway. So, yeah, face almost 7 days a week, but don't advertise it that way.
And you probably want reservations for the truffle experiences?
Oh, yeah. So for all the truffle stuff, yeah, it's pre-sold tickets. Basically, all those dates get released in, like, November, I would say.
Do they fill up pretty quick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah, it's...
You want to do it. Trust
yeah.
me. You
one or two emails and, like, the first half is gone. And then, like, you know, when I send the second half of emails in early January, then the second half sells out. So, yeah. You know, follow us on social media or join the email yeah. list. Or just join the wine club blindly. That works out well, too.
That's so cool.
Great wine. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was super impressed with both these wines. Let's talk about the ones that we went through before we wrap up and the ones that we're probably going to get into a little bit as we get off the air. Which ones did you bring, Brian?
So, I did 2022 Bienvenido Chardonnay.
Yeah.
And
good.
Then 2020 Block 10 Syrah, and then Perigee, which is 87% Tempranillo, 13 Grenache, also from 2020.
Really sharp labels. I love your packaging,
thank
too.
You.
It's got a real, like, classy look to it. Give me 30 seconds on why we decided this.
Yeah, so it was, we worked with Makers and Allies back in the day.
They're awesome.
Because I was, you know, still working for other people at that time, and I only had so much bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So logo is a play on a Pisces symbol. My dad and I are day apart, birthday-wise, in February. Not that I believe in astrology. But it looks great as a logo. The ribbon around that logo on the label is a nod to what we call the keyhole block. It's basically two blocks that go around an oak tree, look like a keyhole.
Cool.
So it's a nod to that. And then everything we kind of do is astrology.
If you're Pisces, you're late February then, because I'm early.
Yep, I'm February 25th.
Oh, nice.
My dad's the 24th.
What's the website for Calesta?
Calesta.com.
I'm going to put links in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But also, same thing, karnwines.com?
Karn is karnwinecellars.com.
Got it. So. And I will put that correct link in the show notes. I got to thank you guys for having me. Andy, it's been really awesome to get to know you a little bit more. Your wines are fantastic. Brian, it was really cool to chat with you. We're from around the same spot back in Southern California.
Trip.
Pretty cool. And you guys are both making great wines. And I want folks listening to come out, try these, make an appointment, because these are two newer tasting rooms that on your next trip to Paso, you have to check out. Thanks, guys, for sharing where wine takes you.
Yep.
Well, this was fun, guys. I really like the two of you. I can't wait to hang out with you guys
Cheers.
Again.
Give me that moonshine, we'll get by. We pass on round till the job is done. Can't die in the trees. The world's amplifying good company.
Much thanks to Andy and to Brian. Both those wines, really, really good. I'm excited to see more how each of these brands grow and evolve. Obviously, some challenges of late with some of the fruit. Like we were talking to Andy, and I wonder if he's going to get that ton for under $30,000 from Colesta. We will find out. We'll have to have them report back. But two great guys, great wines. Hope you check them out. Both those brands have their links in the show notes at your fingertips. Check them out, learn more, and let them know you heard them on Where Wine Takes You. All right, time for our Travel Paso Spotlight. Today we're talking about the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival. They just announced they're honoring Heather Graham with their King Vidor Award. I've seen so many cool people come through with the work I've done with the Slow Film Fest. Like, I remember interviewing and leading a Q&A with Josh Brolin, Gary Busey, Adam West, Jeff Bridges. This year, Heather Graham going to be accepting the King Vidor Award. To talk all about the Slow Film Fest and more, we have the executive director, Skye McLennan. It's great to chat with you. How you doing, Skye?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's really great to talk to you. I know at this time of year, this is one of those things where you're never not doing stuff for the Film Fest, but this time of year, you are in full swing. Things going on.
Yeah, we sure are. You know, lots going on. Lots juggling.
Let's talk about Film Fest this year. San Luis Obispo International Film Fest, the dates. And also, Paso has got a lot of fun stuff to offer. Every year, you're doing stuff all over the place, but a lot of fun stuff in Paso this year.
Yeah, we really want to make sure that we are having like a presence and bringing the energy that we bring to Slow to Paso Robles. And that's why we scheduled it a week after. We call it the Encore in Paso. And yeah, we have some really exciting events there that are exclusive to just Paso.
April 25th through 30th. And then the Encore is May 1st through 5th. Why do we, I love how we do it like that. Talk about the brains behind it though.
Yeah, it was in the past, we screened films in Paso during the festival, and we were just kind of stretched going up in the grade and trying to get filmmakers there. And yeah, as I talked a little bit about, is we just wanted to bring like the energy, some excitement around it, the buzz. And so in having it that week after, we really are all focused on just making it the best it can be in Paso Robles.
All right, let's talk about some of these events during the Encore, because I know, because we are in wine country, the Film Fest always has some films that really dial in that spirit. And this one, of course, Psalm Cup of Salvation will screen, which is the latest in the Psalm series, but also a local movie, which I had a chance to interview Brooke Monroe. Harvest Calls is a really exciting piece.
Yeah, it's actually a really incredible film. Kyle Plummer directed it and worked on it with Brooke, and it's just amazing to see like this kind of local film being made, but about something in wine that is so different, which is that he's basically made this score in the vineyards of San Luis Obispo. It's really amazing watching his process and how he does all of that, and paired with this new Psalm film that is so heartfelt and just an incredible story.
What are some of the different days and events that we should be knowing about? Even, of course, Surf Night is certainly fun. Talk about some of the different events.
Yeah, so during the festival in San Luis Obispo, we've got our opening night at the Fremont. We've got Surf Night the following night. We've also got Dawn of the Dead we're screening as well at the Fremont Theater, and our music video showcase. And then on Sunday, we've got a brand new day. It's a skateboarding day. And at the top of the evening, we're showing Dogtown and Z-Boys. And we've got Stacy Peralta in attendance and some other well-known skaters. and Monday is our Central Coast Day, and then we've got closing night, we've got this amazing film called Thelma. And in Paso Robles, our opening there for the encore is May 2nd. We're going to be showing the Somme film with Harvest Calls. And then we've also got a really wonderful film called The Michoacan File, which is about the history of Mexican cuisine. And we've got an amazing panel lined up for that. That's Sunday, May 5th at Park Cinemas, as well as some tacos and drink tastings by Corazon Cafe.
I love Corazon Cafe. Those guys are so great. Yeah. Such great people. And maybe the best coffee in SLO. That Tosca Latte is my absolute favorite. Tell me about this. Now, this is something that was born out of the pandemic. But, man, I love certain things like to-go cocktails and things like this that were born from the pandemic. Let's talk about the virtual fest, because you have an ability for folks who are anywhere to be a part of the SLO Film Fest.
Yeah, that was something. We were actually one of the first festivals in North America to go virtual, because our festival was supposed to take that week that the lockdowns happened, and we threw up everything online. And we've continued that spirit. We found that there were quite a few folks that still maybe weren't comfortable going to a movie theater, or through accessibility reasons, can't quite make it downtown to SLO. And so it's really opened up our audience and immensely, and that's why we continue to do it. And it's a limited offering of films, not the whole program, but there's still quite a bit on there for you to check out.
All right, go to slowfilmfest.org. Everything you need is right there, including the film guide, the Paso Encore guide, the virtual festival. I love your tab, How to Fest, answers any and all questions that you might have that might come up. Slowfilmfest.org. We're here with the executive director, Sky McLennan. Your hard work and your dedication to your area that you live in and your community and films, it never goes unnoticed, Sky. I really appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate that. It means a lot.
All right, for more, check out slowfilmfest.org. And I appreciate Travel Paso for putting a spotlight on the SLO Film Fest. Again, April 25th through the 30th, and the encore in Paso, May 1st through 5th. You know, I love focusing on these brands that might be little or lesser known, but still mighty in the quality and the stories that they bring and deliver. Coming up on the next episode of Where Wine Takes You, we're very used to hearing words like Dow, Tablas Creek, Adelaida, when we're talking about the Adelaida district of Paso Wine Country. Going to introduce you to two smaller but mighty names in the way that they make wine in our next chat when we share Where Wine Takes You. Where Wine Takes You is executive produced by Joel Peterson and Paso Wine. Associate producer, Krista Smith. The show was recorded, edited, and produced by yours truly. For the latest on Paso Wine, go to PasoWine.com. Follow them on Instagram, also at Paso Wine. And a couple apps for you to consider. The Paso Wine app is your guide to all things Paso Wine Country. And as we're getting closer to Wine Fest, I would even say hit up that app store and get the free Paso Wine Fest app. To plan your stay in Paso, check out TravelPaso.com. Follow them on Insta at TravelPaso. Thanks to our friends Moonshiner Collective for original music on the show called Good Company, and our friends at Fly With Wine for technical consideration and moving our recording equipment around safely. We are getting closer and closer to not only Paso Wine Fest, but our 100th episode of Where Wine Takes You, which I'm super excited about. I'll tease a little bit more next week, but I will say this. Food Network's Tyler Florence is going to be coming to Paso for Wine Fest weekend. You got to check out the event at PasoWine.com. Tyler Florence, Masters of Fire. It's the Friday before the grand tasting. So Friday, May 17th, you're going to get a chance to meet renowned celebrity chef Tyler Florence. You'll get a copy of his new book. You're going to be eating some crazy good grub. It's going to be queuing it up for everyone. And we're going to have him on the show coming up next episode a little too. So lots of good stuff coming up. And I'm stoked to meet him. If you want to reach out or learn more about Up and Adam or anything I got going on, you can check out my website, adammonteel.com. Until then, lift that glass up high, fill it with some beautiful Paso wine, and cheers to sharing, relishing, and enjoying where wine takes you.
So give me that old sound, keep on, we pass all around to the job, it's just a camp down in the Jesus.
will simplify. Look company, give me that bone sound. If I we pass on that till the job is done. Can't die in the trees, it will simplify. Look company, give me that bone sound. We'll get by, we pass on that till the job is done. Can't die in the trees, it will simplify. Good company, give me that moonshine. We'll get by, we pass on round to the job is dry. Camped out in the trees, we'll simplify. Good company.